to our candidates and introduce them. So I thank you once again for attending.
I'm Harry Bergman, for the League of Women Voters of Thomas County. I hope you can hear me. I can't tell if this is so stuck up enough yet for the day. So I'll explain the rules we're going to operate under tonight. Each candidate will have a 3-minute opening statement, and I forgot to have them draw straws, so we'll have to do that in a minute to decide who goes first. The openings will have questions from the audience. As Kay said, come up here, please, to ask your question. And kind of make sure it is a question, not just a statement. We're going to have Kay's acting as timer, so go on, say, over 2 minutes, any questions. That's it. Questions may be directed to a specific candidate, but the other two will have a chance to answer that same question. And I'll decide on which order the questions will be answered. We hope to wrap up the questioning around 2 o'clock, and after that, each candidate will have a 3-minute closing statement. I guess we'll call it the first question to ask. So, we'll have to take care of it, deciding who goes first.
Eliminated and everything. But what is long now, for sure? Let me see. Okay. Short one goes first. Ladies first. Well, okay, I give an opening statement first. Is that what I do?
3 minutes.
Okay.
Christina.
Oh, all right. That's for the people who are.
Or you may go up there if you'd rather.
Hi. It's so good of you to come out tonight because it's absolutely gorgeous. And as we were driving over, we saw lots of families out on the fields playing softball and baseball and enjoying cookouts and doing all sorts of family-oriented things. So it's really nice to see some people come out tonight. This reminds me of one of the first Meet the Candidates nights I ever went to, which was over in the middle school cafeteria. And one of the things that strikes me about being a resident of Lansing is how much I care about the people who are here and how much the Lansing community cares about our children. One of the unfortunate things I think that happens sometimes in a school district is that sometimes some outside people or issues can come into a community and create controversy where ordinarily that controversy wouldn't exist, and that really saddens me. And so what I would really like us to be able to do is to focus on educational issues, which I think this administration and school board and faculty and staff and families should focus on here. Thank you.
Thank you, Christine. Who got the middle link? All right, Mike Cheatham.
Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Mike Cheatham. I am not Gina Laura Shattuck. I made the decision today to run for school board after hearing on the news that Gina was not going to run. I collected my petitions today and handed them in, made it official. I have not had time to prepare a statement. It's been a busy day. A little bit about myself. I've lived here for 20 years, my wife and I. Our 3 children were born here. My oldest son graduated from the school in the class of 2005. He is in his second year at Syracuse University. International relations major with a focus on the Middle East, in large part thanks to the influence of Dan Ferguson. My daughter will be graduating this class 2007. She will also be attending Syracuse University next year and will be studying to become an elementary school teacher with a focus on special needs. My youngest son, Sean, is going into the ninth grade next year. I have no idea what he's going to do, but he will certainly use the computer as a tool to do it. He takes things apart, puts them back together again. I'm confused a lot of times about what he's doing. I work at Syracuse University. I've worked there for the last 10 years. Prior to that, I worked at Cornell University for 10 years. It was Cornell that brought my wife and I into this area. Prior to that, I worked for NASA Ames out in San Jose, California for 2 years in the Division of Planetary Biology. And just before that, I received my master's from the University of New Hampshire. I am a scientist at Syracuse University. My focus is on instrumentation design. I build laser systems for the faculty in the department there, master carters. Lately, I've been doing a lot for the department in terms of recruiting undergraduates to focus on earth sciences as a major. So a little bit of marketing and advertising for me. I'm running the school board primarily because I have a deep, deep interest in academics and curriculum. It floats under the surface, I think, kind of like permafrost here. We know that we're here for the purposes of academics, but it usually doesn't come to the forefront, at least at the school board meetings that I've attended over many, many years, going all the way back to John Barney. So that's why I'm here, and I hope I have your support. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mike. And now, David Itten.
Thank you. I would like to thank the PTSO for having this event tonight and allowing voters in Lansing to see the candidates. My name is David Dittman, as you know, because I was the third one, got the long stick here on the in the draw. I'm a lifelong educator. I started my career at Ohio State as a teaching assistant in 1969. I have been in academics my whole career. I've been at Northwestern University, Duke University. I was the chair of the accounting department at the University of Minnesota. And I came here in 1990 to be the fourth dean of the School of Hotel Administration. I am now the Hubert E. Westfall Professor of Accounting at the School of Hotel Administration. So I think that over the years, I have a feel for what we call academic excellence. And this school has a high school and a grade school and a middle school that has demonstrated, I believe, academic excellence in the past. And I want to assure that it has academic excellence in the future. As I say, I've devoted my whole life to education. So being on the school board is not something that, is a rare event. I mean, it's something that's a natural outgrowth for what I do. As I said, I'm also an accountant. I've been very saddened to watch both the school budget and the capital budget go down to defeat here in Lansing. I think the school budget and the capital budget went down to defeat for good reasons, okay? Because there was a disconnect between the amount that was in the budget and the ability of the voters in Lansing to pay for those things in the budget. And I would like to bring those voters into the process and help them understand what education is about, what the needs of the Lansing school system are, and how we might move forward from here. I believe in fiscal responsibility. Everywhere that I've been, at least in the last 15 years, I've been in charge of major academic budgets. I believe that we can provide academic excellence in a cost-effective manner. But one needs to associate with the program output the resources that we are using and the dollars we are expending in order to achieve those outputs. And as a member of the Board of Education, I will ask hard questions as to how those dollars we're spending are being utilized in order to achieve academic excellence and academic results. I believe that the strength of the Lansing school system is in its teachers and in the Lansing community. In the years that I have been here, we have always had the support of the Lansing community, and I look forward to having that support again.
Thank you very much. Now we'll take questions from the floor. And remember, please come up to the microphone and give your name first. I realize that probably everybody in Lansing knows everybody else, but I don't know who you are. And make sure that you're asking a question, not just stating your own opinion. So who would like to go first? This is really putting you on the spot.
Are we doing the same order that I go first all the time? Or?
We won't go very well.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Martha Glass. Okay. Easy question. Maybe not something. Might have to think about it a little bit. Over the last year, the normally very supportive Lansing voters have turned down a budget and a building project. Do you have any ideas for regaining voters' trust?
Christine, would you like to start out on that?
Do you want me to stay?
It's up to you.
Okay. I think that's an excellent question. It's a question that's emerged this past year. Of course, it assumes that the reason or one of the reasons for the defeats has been trust, and I happen to agree with that. I think that has been established, as David has said. I think that there has been a disconnect, and we desperately need to reconnect. So we know that the voters did not accept the budget or the capital project, and I think we need to know why. Now, David was on the facilities committee, so I'm sure, I believe that he attended every meeting. I attended several, and I certainly noticed an amount of frustration in terms of the process that was used, because it seemed to me as an observer that some people felt as though they were talking, but they weren't really being heard or listened to in a serious way. And so they may have just been spinning their wheels and not being taken very seriously. So to answer your question, I think we have to solicit information from our community in a variety of ways. I think surveys are one way, but I think one of the things that this district needs to do is actually invite people and reach out to people and sincerely welcome their feedback in a very non-threatening way, because I think at some points when people are faced with hard questions, the tendency is to get defensive. And I know we've had administrators here before who did not get defensive. In fact, they welcomed questions and were able to slow things down and answer them sincerely. And I think that's all people want. I don't think people come here to criticize us or the administration or the school. I think everybody deserves an answer, and we're accountable to the public because this is a public institution. This is our school, not their school. And I think if we send out that message and welcome feedback, that would be a step in the right direction. I hope I've answered your question.
Yeah. Thank you. All right, David.
Well, as I said, I think that there is a disconnect between the voters and the budget issues, both at the capital level and at the operating level. I believe that the signal is being sent. Signal is being sent to the school board to be more fiscally responsible and to explain to them exactly why such dollars were being spent and what they were getting for those dollars. And I believe that that's an educational process. It's a process by which the school board needs to reach out to the community, let the community know what the issues are, why we need to spend $22 million, and how those dollars are going to be spent, and how we get a better educational system out of it. that involved, I believe the voters of Lansing will embrace the bond issues and embrace the budget and vote it in.
Thank you. Mike?
Hello, Martha. I'm not convinced that this was an issue of lack of trust. I think this was an issue of lack of understanding. I'm not sure that the district, be it the administration, the board, whatever you want to define the district to be, I don't think they did a very good job of explaining the needs in the capital project. We had chapter and verse, almost the same dog and pony show. At the multiple presentations that were made, that almost always started off with the new part of the building. Whereas I think the focus really should have been put on the maintenance issues that we needed to take care of, boiler replacements, new roofs, whatever it may be. That should have been first and foremost. Perhaps we should have had a third option on that capital project, Part C, of $8 or $9 million to take care of those particular issues. Now that said, I don't know if you only dealt with those issues as a separate item, if they could still have been funded with state aid. That I don't know. Having not sat up here before, I'm not sure of those facts, but to me that seems like a logical thing to have done. Give us a third option. I know that we needed the space in the building, in the high school building in particular, but I don't think the voters were ready for it. In terms of the failed budget, yeah, I think there was a bit of a protest in that first vote, but when you look at how many people came out for the second vote, I think you saw our clear support for the school district there. Again, maybe it just wasn't presented to us very well. The message wasn't gotten out to us effectively. I'm not sure it's an issue of trust.
Thank you very much. Somebody over here had a question? Okay, false alarm. Next question? Good.
My name is Dave Dubin. As long as we're on the capital project, where do we take it from here? I've heard that the DOE intends to pick it up in the fall. Two of the three of you are going to be involved in that. How do you see it happening? And when do you see it happening? It was a real effort by the board to run this in December. And the period between Thanksgiving and Christmas being what it is, that didn't inspire a lot of trust among people who were in the facilities. It is a matter of trust for a lot of us. So how do you see the process going in the future? Well, this issue will be right up there again.
I'm going to ask David to answer first.
Well, I was a member of the Facilities Committee. I made every one but one meeting, or I had another meeting to go to. There was several things, I think, that went wrong with the Facilities Committee. One, we lost community support while the process was going on. You could see the community members just drifting away from the process. And every time a community member drifted away from the process, you lost their vote, and we lost their friends' votes. And so I was part of the problem. Second part of the problem was I didn't think the process was run extremely well. To some extent, it was like a floating crap game. Sometimes we had meetings when they were scheduled, and sometimes we didn't have meetings when they were scheduled. Something else came up, and emails didn't go out to tell us that the meeting had been canceled. So some of us showed up for meetings that we thought were there and then weren't there. Okay, so if we're going to do a facilities committee, we're going to involve the members of the community. I think we have to keep those members of the committee informed as to what's going on and when the committee is going to meet, etc. Secondly, I think that there was a lot of things packed into that facilities budget of which not all of them had good academic content. And I believe that we need to, in a new facilities or capital project, we need to cut the wheat from the shaft, so to speak. We need to find out what our needs are from the standpoint of repairs and maintenance, Do we need a new boiler? If so, then we should be buying a new boiler. Do we need new air conditioning units? Then we need to buy new air conditioning units. But we also need to understand what the academic component of that is and how the increase in capital increases the teacher's ability to be able to teach effectively in their classrooms and to provide a better education to our students than the current facilities are giving.
All right, thank you. Mike?
If we do this again, I believe that we shouldn't start this from the community's perspective. It should be started from the school teachers up to the administration in that building, and then up to the central administration, presented to the school board, and at that time it's presented to the general public. But it's the teachers who should be dictating what is needed in these buildings to fulfill their academic mission. While we might like to see an auditorium, we might like to see a new music wing, we might like to see this, that, or the other thing as the general public. It really is the teachers in the building that know what it is that we really need and don't need. And that's the way I think it should start, coming from within the buildings and moving up the chain. And I think that's the way it should be done the second time around.
Thank you.
I like that Mike is indicating he thinks teachers are very important to the process, and I would have to agree, but I don't even think the teachers would say that we should exclude other stakeholders such as administrators, because the administrators are an important, very important facet of this. I think perhaps some mistakes were made when the capital project was in its very beginning stage, because it was presented to the then facilities committee as what would you like to see, and so people thought of it as a wish list, and I don't think that that's a rational way to go about a capital project, is with somebody saying, well, yes, we'd like this, this, and this, and I think some of the items stayed on the basis of that original wish list. One of the things that I've been asking for that I think should drive a capital project is program, and that has been missing from this equation. We've been asking, or some of us have been asking, for what programs do we have that are good programs that serve our children, that need to be maintained or need to be bolstered or need to be deleted. How much do they cost? What is the running cost of the programs, and what needs to be done to keep the good and get rid of the bad? This has not been presented anywhere, and I think it's sorely needed. So where do we take it from here? I think it needs to start with some kind of program assessment. I think we need to rely on some experts, outside, objective people who are not driven by profit and with their relationship with the district. And when do we propose that? I think there were some issues with a winter bond vote for people who are not here in the winter, and certainly I would want it to occur when most people are here and there's going to be accessibility to the public.
Thank you, Christine. Do we have another question?
I'd like to ask the three of you, if you were to hear that teacher morale was low, how would you respond as a Board of Education member?
Do you have any particular candidate you wish to start?
I'd like all of you to.
All right, let's see. So Mike gets to start first this time.
Sue, I'd like to, if I was on the board, so I'm on the board, I'd like to know why. Why is teacher morale low? That's the first question I would ask, whether that's in the personnel committee or it's brought up in front of the school board directly. I'd like to know why. Simple as that. And depending on what the answer is, we'll take appropriate action. So if you want to give me some scenarios, why morale might be low?
No, I don't want to get into that with you. I'm just saying, do you see yourself as an active person that might provide a solution?
Absolutely not. Absolutely. I want to know why. I really do not know why. And let's fix it.
Christine?
I guess I'm glad you're asking that because over the last summer, I had been hearing from people that morale was low. I can't tell you how disturbing that is to me as a member of this community because of the hero status that the faculty and staff have here in Lansing for me. And a pattern was established in my mind that I had been hearing it from enough people, from varied people, over a period of time, that I did bring it to a board meeting in September and ask that we address it. I think it is very difficult for a school board to address that because when you address an issue of employee morale, faculty and staff morale, it may indicate something about the working relationship, and that might imply some administrators, and in particular the superintendent. Given that, I did ask if we could please somehow get feedback from faculty and staff about this issue, the board did not go along with that, although they did say they believed the morale was important. We had a disagreement, and the disagreement, as far as I can interpret it, was this. There are fellow board members who at this board meeting felt as though just hearing in sort of an ad hoc fashion from people who would come up and talk to them was sufficient, and I did not. I think when you are in an institution like a school, which is a people place, we're all about people here. Teachers and staff are people, and the students are people, and the parents are people. That's our number one resource in the school. And so they wanted to go just based on that, and I wanted to use some other way to get at, you know, how do we get feedback from faculty and staff. At that point, they said it was too late to do so, and that was in September, and nothing has come of it yet. So I suppose, you know, one board member can't do it. One can insist, but if you're one of seven and you're voted down, I suppose you can caucus your other board members to see if they could pay attention to it. But I think we need to do it in a non-threatening way so that people feel comfortable coming up to us. And I think board members, again, really need to listen and hear and follow up on things that we hear. I don't know if I answered your question adequately.
Okay, Christine.
Well, thank you. Teacher morale. Morale in any academic institution among the academic staff is a very important issue. One of the things that people do in business is they do surveys of their employees to see how satisfied their employees are and whether their employees have good morale or bad morale, because it's been demonstrated that employees with good morale that are satisfied do a better job, do a more efficient job, and consequently use resources better and have better outcomes. So the real question is, should we start a employee satisfaction questionnaire and consistently measure it year after year, along with other measures, maybe of community satisfaction, which would provide the board with input into the decisions that they're making. Businesses throughout the country are using a balanced scorecard approach. Not only do they care about profits, but they care about employee morale, customer satisfaction, and they like to see the links between them. I happen to know a little bit about this because I'm currently doing research in this area. And we know that there's a link between employee satisfaction, efficient use of resources, customer satisfaction, and profitability in a profit-making firm. So there's no reason to believe that high morale shouldn't be very important to us here. But I think the board has to be very careful not to be grinding somebody's axe for them in a individual situation. So that's why you need to have a systematic way to collect this information such that you know at the end of the day that the results that you have are actionable results.
Okay, Thank you. And I believe you had a question. Yes.
Hi, my name is Melissa Harris. I have a general open-ended question that I'd like to go through you to answer. What is the most important thing that the Board of Education needs to accomplish in the next 1 to 3 years?
Christine, as an incumbent, would you start off with that?
The 1 to 3 years. I think over this next year, we need to reconnect with the community. I do believe, as some people have pointed out, although I think maybe perhaps Mr. Cheatham disagrees with this, that there is an issue of trust. I believe that whether people aren't getting enough information or the right information, or they're not feeling welcomed, or they're not seeing where the district wants to spend their hard-earned money, whatever, we don't really know why this distrust might exist. So I would like to establish that and find out why, if it does exist. So we need to reestablish ourselves as trustworthy people on the school board that have the interests of our community and that we're not agreeing with the administrators to go along. Our job as a school board is to hold the administration accountable. And I think that that's a very important duty for any school board member. Over the next 3 years, it seems very clear to me that we need to engage in some kind of discourse with our community to start a capital project. The shape of that and the dollar amount to that is up for the stakeholders to determine. I think we need to revisit that issue. So I think those are the two things. And another thing is to look at the long-range plan again. I wasn't directly involved in that process, but my feeling is that there are some items in that long-term plan there that need to be revisited by more stakeholders.
Okay, we'll go down the table to David.
I believe connecting a strategic plan to the resources that we use is the most important thing for us to look at. I've looked at the strategic plan. I'm having a hard time making sense of it as it's published on the website. Maybe there's another strategic plan that's out there that I haven't seen. But it seems to me that we would want to define clearly what the goals of this school are and broad goals, not specific little things like improving the ability of our people with disabilities to do better. But we would want to do a program for the whole school from the standpoint of set goals and achievable results for all the students within the school, and then measure our activities against those results over the years. I think it's very important that the community understand how successful this school is. When I looked on the website, I couldn't find test results for the middle school or the primary school. I found Regent exams for the high school for the last 2 years, but I didn't see these other ones. Now maybe they're there. I searched around. I didn't find them. When I went online, I tried to find them too. But if I'm having a hard time finding them and I'm looking for them, then we need to ask, how is a normal citizen in the community finding out about these things? They should be popping up right on the website, because these are our success measures. And we are successful here at Lansing School System. We have done a very good job. I remember the results that are printed in the newspaper. But once they're printed, they're gone, it seems like. So I think we need to reinforce that and make sure that people in Lansing understand just how good a school system we have.
Thank you. Mike?
I would have to say the single most important thing that we need to do over the next 3 years, we need to make the reputation of this school district the absolute best in Tompkins County in terms of academics, by all the various ways that you measure academic achievement. There are many different metrics to do that. Right now, if you do look at test scores, particularly at 4th and 8th grade, we are not necessarily the most excellent school district in the county. We're still being beat by Trumansburg. The data is out there, but you'd have to go to the state education department to find it. It's on the school report cards. The data is there. If you plot it up, and that's something that I do. I've been doing it since they first started publishing the data. It's there. You can look at the math scores. You can look at the English language arts scores. You can look at the science scores. You can plot them up. You can look at it comparing it us to Groton, to Dryden, to Ithaca, Trumansburg. I've done it all. We do well, but we're not the absolute best. We don't stand heads above the other school districts. And I think that's something that we should be striving for. The thing I am concerned about, and the reason to me that this is a really important issue, is we actually have vacancies in the elementary school. The number of students in those classrooms is down 25%, 15%, compared to what it used to be back when my two older children were going through the school, even my youngest son going through there. We have seats to fill. And I think that we should be actively trying to get families with children to move to Lansing. We need to market and advertise how good we are, why they should come here rather than moving to Trumansburg or Dryden or Ithaca. The buildings are there. They have heating bills. They have electrical bills. Teacher salaries still have to be met. Let's put bodies in the seats, not just people moving into Lansing that no longer have children, that older group of parents. Let's get families in here that have school-age children. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do we have another question? Yes.
So my name is Roger Yagoda. I work here at the Lansing School System. This may be an uncomfortable situation question because we've all seen Columbine at Virginia Tech. So my question is about security in schools. Biggest concern we have is, you know, what if, could it happen, things like that. Specifically, I want to know the candidates' feelings about security cameras at the doorways and maybe even in the buses. Anything we can do so that no one ever has to ask an august body like yourselves, why didn't you?
David, you start things off, please.
It's my turn.
Well, I see no problem with having security cameras at the entrance of the school. We have them in the hotel school, Cornell. We have security cameras to make sure that goods we have stay in the school, to make sure that we don't monitor them constantly, but to make sure we have a record of what happens in the hallways, etc. I'm not sure that you need it on the buses. You have a monitor on the bus, but and I'm not sure what a camera on the bus would do. I think we have to ask ourselves, how do we provide security at the school? Do we lock the building when classes are in session, or is it an open building? If we lock the building, then access is limited. Okay. How can we tell whether someone in the building belongs in the building? Do we issue passes? Do they have a pass when they're here? Do they have a tag on their lapel or on their pocket when they're walking around the building? Something to identify a visitor that's come to the principal's office versus somebody who is not registered to be here during the school day. But it's an open building. It's something that we face in society. It's very difficult to provide absolute security in any public building that has public access without limiting ingress and egress from the building.
Mike?
Roger, I would, in this case, definitely separate Columbine from Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech is something that I worry about at Syracuse University, that kind of scenario. An open campus like Cornell or Wells College, that's a very difficult thing to deal with in terms of security. Buildings have to remain open to just about anybody, to the public, in those situations. Columbine, and drawing the parallel to Lansing High School, I'm quite comfortable with these buildings being locked down tight as a drum. Alarms on the doors that aren't supposed to be used as egress except in an emergency. I have no problem at all with security cameras being placed in the doorways. But the staffing issue now comes up, because somebody has to be monitoring those cameras for them to be effective. If you have multiple cameras covering multiple doorways, is that something that one individual can realistically monitor during the course of the school day? I don't know. That's a real attention span issue. But I do think, yep, let's put security cameras at that front entrance.
put them at key locations at the crossways and hallways if need be. They may not have to be monitored all the time, but those on tape. But the front door, yeah, let's have it monitored right in the main office or something like that. On the buses, that's a little tricky. And the issue of the bus, I remember the situation that happened a few years back in Newfield with a couple of older students doing some stuff in the back of the bus that they absolutely shouldn't have been doing. It was a late bus run, I believe, after school, so the bus wasn't full. Is there any way to monitor those students doing what they were doing with the camera? Who's going to watch the camera, the bus driver? I'd rather have them watching the road. So I don't know the answer to that one, but that's a tricky one, putting cameras on buses.
Christine? Roger, you're very new to this district, so there'd be no way for you to know that this topic has been discussed ad nauseum in this district, and we've talked about all different aspects of school security. And I would say one of the best things to ever happen to the Lansing School District, by the way, I have to take issue with Mike, because I think we have a nice small school here. It's one of the things that makes this place wonderful and why we want to stay here. A lot of families want to be here because we're small. Research is showing that small schools is what is best for kids. So I want to keep it a secret. Let them stay in Trumansburg, and we Lansing people will savor our Lansing district. But we have CAS here. And one of the themes that runs through issues of inappropriate or terrible violence is that a lot of these people were bullied terribly in school. And if you're in a large school district, it's very easy for kids to slip through the cracks, for adults not to notice them, not to engage with them, not to overhear a kid getting picked on. And I won't say that it doesn't happen here, but we are fostering a culture, thanks to our teachers, Penny Barisi, Margaret Marcoux, the middle school teachers, the CAS task force, and parents, administrators, and teachers, where we are creating an environment here where we look out for each other, where we care about each other, where if you come to my lunch table and I'm sitting there with Julie, and you say to me or to Julie, can I sit here in this empty seat? And Julie says, no. And I say, well, Julie, that's not what we do here at Lansing. Of course he can sit here. And this is what we're teaching our kids. So I think we're doing a marvelous job as sort of a preventative measure of making all of us feel welcome. And I have to tell you, somebody comes in here and I don't know them, there's other people who don't know them too. As you said earlier, this is Lansing, we're small, and we do recognize each other. So I think that's what's wonderful about, one of the things that's wonderful about us.
Thank you very much. Do we have another question? Yes.
I'm Chris Barber, Public School teacher spouse. Like to take that step, one step farther, where I believe there's need for some sort of surveillance in school. I don't know how you ever watch it. But as Christine said, we have the CAS program, which deals with the root of the problem. And I think CAS has got a lot of buy-in in the community and stuff, and the teachers understand behind it. But I feel like CAS might need to be taken to the second level. How, as school board members, would you feel about funding a position that we're paying somebody to be the CAS person? Penny and Margaret have done a lot of good work, and I think we need to take this to the next level. And the next level is prevention, and teaching the kids how to be treat each other, and working from there, because you're never going to know the kids. It didn't stop because you've educated them and brought them to the program. You're only going to know the ones you do. So we're kind of wondering where how you guys feel about finding that kind of position.
Mike, would you answer that?
Somebody needs to help me out on this. Aren't Penny and Margaret being compensated?
No, it's extra.
It's completely voluntary on their part.
That's right.
Okay.
in all honesty, I would expect the community members to be volunteering for this. Both of my older children were mentors in the CAST program. Danny, my oldest son, was right there at its inception. Kelly followed along right on his heels. I think they actually overlapped on the committees. But as a parent, with two children participating as mentors on this, I think there was a fundamental shift in the effectiveness of that program from its very first year to its subsequent years. This is where I'm becoming popular. I think what happened with CAS is that it became the popular club to join, the popular organization. So we had numerous kids participating as mentors in the CAS program who really had no business being mentors. They didn't take it seriously. And I think that's part of some of the problems with the program. I think there needs to be a better filter for who gets on to that program as a student mentor. They need to be vetted. They need to meet certain criteria. They have to take it seriously. Then they'll be effective. But I don't think you open this kind of a program up to just about anybody who wants to have it on their school record. Okay. Didn't answer your question yet. Should it be funded? I don't know yet. I want to see just how effective or non-effective the program is. We need more data before I jump on that bandwagon and say, yep, let's fund a person to be in charge of it. I want to see the data first.
Christine?
I think I'm not really sure about, I don't know of what Mike is talking about in terms of the kids. I do know that other younger children learn best from children who are just a little bit older than they are. This is something that we've gone through. That, you know, the kids, the high schoolers are absolutely, if you want to see some kids who are successful, I've taken my Wells College students to mentor presentations in the middle school. And to see those middle schoolers look up to those high schoolers and to see those high schoolers connect with those middle schoolers made me so very proud to be a part of Lansing, because this is part of who we are and what we count as success. But I would have to, you know, determine, I would have to see if, first of all, the people who know best, like Penny and Margaret, if they think this is something that's needed. I do know that they need support. This is something that they do on top of everything else that they do. And I definitely believe in furthering the program. I think that some of the things that we really need is administrative buy-in. I know we had it when CAS first came. Also, we need the philosophy of CAS to be systemic. That is, you don't just do it during CAS time, but in every class you go to, in the hallways, in the cafeteria, in phys ed class, out there on the sports fields, in the swimming pool, that CAS or the principles of CAS, I mean, I know we've talked about this, that those are there. So we need, you know, the whole environment to buy in so it's not just a CAS thing, it's a Lansing thing. I don't know if I answered you. But
thank you, Christine. I guess we have David left to go.
Well, I think a program like this is part of the culture of the school. And a culture of the school starts at the top and comes down through the other members of the organization. So it has to be embraced by the superintendent, it has to be embraced by the principals, and it has to be embraced down the line by the teachers. I don't believe that a culture is created by having a head of culture. Okay, I believe that it's up to every individual in the school that's a teacher, that's a mentor, to embrace that culture and communicate it to the students that are here, to check students' behavior when they need to have it checked and be called back into a mode where they can reflect upon the behavior, which is not part of the culture of the school. And having a paid position makes me almost think like I'm in some other country where I have a position of culture, and I philosophically don't like that, and budget-wise, I don't think I can support it.
Thank you. I think we have time for one more question. Yes?
I'm Dan Conowalo. I'm a farmer. I grow raspberries and other good things. And raspberries that would be ready for you to pick the first weekend after the summer solstice. So I invite you out to our place on Altree Grove, 199. Come to the pick.
Is this a question?
I was concerned that there is some indication, Mike, that you would like to get the population of the school up. And as former chairman of the Agriculture and Environmental Protection Board in this county, I have seen a lot of data to the effect that farms get overtaxed compared to urban and suburban property owners. They get something like 60 or 70 cents worth of service for a dollar of tax, while the suburban or urban property owner gets something like a dollar and 30 cents worth of service. A lot of that has to do with schools. That is a big disparity. Land doesn't produce kids. People do. Okay? So, do you see any way that the school board might help to redress that, what I see is the great imbalance?
Are you directing this question at Mike?
He got the thought process going, but I think all of the folks here, all the candidates, could well respond.
I need to ask for a rephrasing then, because I won't. Could you just rephrase it a bit into a...
Okay, the data is this, other than picking raspberries. The data is that the farm property gets overtaxed compared to urban and suburban property. Okay, and the biggest source of that tax disparity, this is overall property tax, is the school tax. Okay. And do you see any way that the school board has a function in, number one, if you believe that data, and number two, do you see a way that the school board can operate to redress that balance somewhat, to make it more even?
Christine?
Oh, boy. I am not familiar with the data, so I don't know about the difference between farm taxes and other taxes. However, I do know that there are sub-organizations and school boards. For instance, Larry Cummings is the executive director of the Central New York School Boards Association, and he has worked very, very hard along with the Mid-States Consortium to petition legislators and the governor for a fairer state aid formula. So in terms of what a school board can do, people such as, well, I'm the representative of Lansing on the BOCES board, we regularly communicate with local politicians and state politicians to talk about how do we make things fairer so that no matter where children reside or where taxpayers reside, that students are getting a fair and adequate education, and that the taxing is fair also. So I think, you know, we have to be informed, and I think there are people working on it behind the scenes. It's not a very, it doesn't catch a lot of headlines to talk about finances, but there are people who work on it, and certainly school board members are encouraged to work on that as well.
David, do you have anything else to add?
My turn. Dan, it's not only farms that pay their disproportionate share of school taxes. High-value homes pay a larger share than low-value homes. So the question is, when you have a real estate tax, which is based upon assessed value, then you know, we have a disproportionate payment system, which has some taxpayers paying a higher amount than other taxpayers paying you know, that have smaller properties. When you look at it in the United States tax code, they call our school taxes discretionary expenses. Okay, and consequently, those people then that have these high taxes get hit with a alternative minimum tax, so they actually pay more federal income tax because of the high school tax. So they get double taxed. What I would like to see, okay, to be quite frank about it, would be to move away from property tax completely, and let's move to an income tax, okay, statewide, because statewide income tax would be much fairer to do, especially with the problem that the current state government has right now with how they're going to fund New York City schools, because the New York City schools would be paying for their own schools if they had a statewide income tax on the income earned in New York City, okay, as opposed to Rochester paying for New York City schools or Ithaca paying for New York City schools. So I would like to see us move away from the property tax as a taxing vehicle completely and move into an income tax, because then people with the ability can pay, as opposed to somebody whose house is arbitrarily reassessed year after year. You know, I'm sure that everybody in this room is aware that our tax rate is going up, not at the stated rate that's in the school budget, but it's compounded by the fact that our property values are being reassessed year after year. So it's a compound rate. I can tell you that last year, where this city had a 2.7% tax increase, I had a 9.7% tax increase, okay, from the standpoint of together with property value reassessment, and that wasn't even a year that I was supposed to be reassessed. So that we're now, you know, looking at a system that compounds the tax rate in the same year, not even over years, which is becoming completely unfair and a burden on our taxpayers in Lansing. And so moving to a state income tax would be much fairer.
If I may put it in plug for the League of Women Voters, we just completed a study on school financing, how to finance education, and this is a legislative priority for the League of Women Voters to get things changed.
Good. I'll vote for you.
Dan, the first part of your question, do I believe the numbers? I have no knowledge based to believe or not believe. I'll take your word for it. Other than that, I agree with everything he said. And here's why. I'm a scientist. He's a number cruncher. I got to take his word for this. Right? I defer. But I do agree with him. It should be based on income, not on assessed property value.
Well, it's 8 o'clock or thereabouts, so I think we'll wind up the questioning part of this program. I'm sure I didn't check with the candidates, but if you have a question that you didn't have a chance to ask, they would stay afterwards and answer your question privately. But now we'll go to closing statements, and I guess we'll start off with David.
Thank you. Well, as I said, I've been a resident of Lansing for 17 years. I'm an educator by training and by education. I believe in high-quality education. I believe that Lansing has all the ingredients to have a high-quality educational environment. They have a dedicated teaching staff. They have a good student population. And we have the resources within this community to be able to bring those two together in excellent educational programs. I believe that my training as an accountant and as an educator brings something unique to the school board. And if the voters of Lansing elect me, I'll do my best in order to use my talents in order to create the best school system in the area or in the state right here in Lansing.
Thank you. Christina,
you
go ahead
next. Again, I don't have a prepared statement, but I've been on the school board for, this will be my sixth year, and I would like to be able to serve the community for another 3 years. And as David said, I'm for educational excellence in a fiscally responsible way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We'll finish up with Mike.
I really do want to see academics, our course offerings, the curriculum that's being taught, aligned vertically through three schools. I do want to see the seats filled. I don't want to see vacancies in the elementary school. I don't want to see vacancies down the road in the middle school. I think that shows signs of degradation in the school district when that's happening. Enrollment is going down in every school district in the county. We're not alone in this. So I do go back to Steve. We need to get the families that are moving into Cornell, families that are moving in, taking jobs at the college, Wells College, big companies around here. They have school-aged children. We do need to make Lansing the most attractive place for them to move to because of our school district. I want to see some changes in the course offerings that we have here. I want to see additions. That does mean more teachers. I'm going to be upfront with the voters on this. That means more money in the budget. But I do want to see more teachers in the school district. I would like to see more AP courses offered in this high school. We have quite a few. But Trumansbury is about the same size school district as ours in terms of number of students. They do offer more AP courses than we do. I know Michelle Stone would like to see our pre-engineering program become a robust and attractive option for our students. The reality is we need to offer Calculus BC, we offer Calculus AB, and it does not prepare our engineering students in college adequately enough. So that's the course we need to offer here. We do need something like an AP Chemistry or an AP Physics course in this place. AP Biology is the only advanced science that we offer. But science is something that everybody encounters every moment, every day of their life. You've all taken aspirin, you've all taken Tylenol, you've all taken Motrin. That's science in action, going into your body. You've taken antibiotics, that's science. We do need to bolster the science program here. I would like to see foreign language offered as early as the fifth grade, within the next 2 or 3 years. And if possible, I'd like to see the same foreign languages offered in some way to the elementary school children, maybe not in a formal language, but bring, for instance, Spanish into the classroom and teaching culture, maybe a few phrases. Let's get it introduced. So it's academics for me, folks. That's what I'm here for. Thank you.
Thank you all for coming. Thank you to the candidates for giving us your time, especially Mike, who is here quite a bit. I don't want to single him out, but I'm very impressed with us with happening. I believe there are refreshments left, is that right?
There might be a few.
No, okay. I can't see where
I am. I can't. And you're welcome to take anything you would like.
Yes,
I'd like
you
to
all
join me and thanking Mrs. Bookman for
you.
And also a big thank you to our candidates.